This is Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. Everybody, can you hear that? Can you hear that sound? That's our Science Friday book club coming to order, and it's back in session. You might recall that earlier this year, we asked you to build an art machine and show it to us. And boy, did you respond. Boy, we got reactions. The club is now back with a new challenge. And here to tell us about it are two of the founding members of the Science Club, Science Friday's education manager, Ariel Zitch.
Hello.
Hi there. And our director, Charles Berquist. Welcome back. Okay, what's on the agenda?
Well, so you did so well with the first project that we figured we'd aim a little higher. And so we've got a very, very simple goal here. We want you to observe everything.
Observe everything.
Just everything.
So everywhere you are, just look around you.
We want you to observe everything in a way that you haven't before. Uh-huh. So observation, as you probably know, is kind of that first step towards discovery. It's really fun. It gets you thinking about something and discovering things that you never knew about an object that maybe you just passively noticed, were passively interested in. But then when you observe it with the eyes of a scientist, you mm-hmm. come away with something totally new. We want everyone to feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it doesn't matter where you are, what you were doing, pick something to observe.
Anything. It could be trees. It could be clouds. It could be bugs. It could be, intergalactic data that you got off the NASA website. We want you to go out and notice something.
You know, I was a judge at the Google Science Fair last week. I was out there. And the grand prize winners were three young women who were just, they were very observant. One of them's mother was out planting peas, and she picked up the pea plant, and they noticed there were these nodules. It's a legume, right? It's got all these nodules on it. And they knew that they did some research. There were bacteria interacting with the legumes nodules to make the plant grow. And they said, hey, why can't we do this on plants that are cereal crops? And they went out and they did their own research. They won the grand prize in this, did the science, just because they observed it happening in the soil.
Absolutely.
Is that the kind of thing you're looking for? Just see something and write about it.
Right. I mean, there are so many great scientific discoveries that, you know, had their basis in somebody noticing something and going, wow, that's kind of weird. Or being struck by something and deciding to follow up on that. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite stories is apparently back in 1743, Ben Franklin, loved Franklin, he wanted to watch this lunar eclipse. And he was really disappointed because in Philadelphia that night, it was cloudy. Mm-hmm. And then he heard that in Boston at the same time, it wasn't cloudy. And they got to see the eclipse that he had been waiting for. And he, you know, this was before there was a lot of solid meteorology information out there. He thought, that's kind of weird. And so he started observing the weather rigorously, mm-hmm. recording where the storms were when and what direction the wind was. And from that was able to develop one of the sort of first theories of how storms move in the upper atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Charles Darwin did the same thing. I mean, he was out there, he was observing all kinds of stuff, every living thing he could get his hands on. But when he did it more carefully in that kind of methodical, rigorous, note-taking sort of way, he said, okay, well, these Galapagos finches, they look like the ones that I saw in South America. They look like the ones I saw on the coast. These weren't just put here. That's heritable variation. That's a huge tenet for all of the work that Charles Darwin did. So, you know, we recognize that actually that skill of observation, even though it's essential and basic and something that any kid can do, we want people to actually to try just a little bit harder, to elevate themselves and to do it carefully and methodically.
And in what method? What is the method here? Do they have to record things they see? What would you like them to send us?
Well, so they can do it in a whole bunch of ways. We've got, photographs are actually a classic form of observation, right? Mm-hmm. If you take photographs carefully of your plant, you'll notice that your plant starts to move in a crazy way that you maybe wouldn't have noticed if you had just looked at it that one time. We've got all kinds of data. Any measurement you've ever taken is actually a quantitative observation. So maybe if you take a few measurements of something that you think might be changing, you'll be able to see a pattern, mm-hmm. right? And what's you know, so exciting about Science Club, the way Science Friday does it, is that you can share those in any way. You can share them on Twitter. You can share them on Facebook. You can share them on Instagram. You can call up and record your observations. You can do them in audio boo. You can email us. There's really no limit.
It's on our website, how to do this, right?
Yes, absolutely. ScienceFriday.com/Science Club. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of directions are there, along with a whole bunch of links out to other resources.
Right. I know you've been quizzing our staff already, Charles.
Right. So, I mean, just to give you an example of some of the kinds of things out there that, you know, it doesn't have to be deep. It doesn't, we don't want you to solve, you know, mm-hmm. the mysteries of the universe here. So we went around and asked some of our staff about things that they've been wondering, things that they've noticed, and how they might be able to find out more about them.
I swaddle my four-month-old every night so she goes to sleep, but she wakes up throughout the night. She breaks herself out of the swaddle and wakes herself up. So on the nights that I've tried to not swaddle her, she just won't go to sleep at all. However, I've noticed that there is a small window of time where she will actually sleep with her arms out of a swaddle, and that is between 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. What would I do to figure that out? I would set up a video cam in her room and record her sleeping.
I've noticed that after my cat eats, he runs right away over to the litter box, and I was thinking, you know, in what goes in pushes what else is in there. But then I was thinking, maybe I just noticed because it's funny. Maybe he actually goes to the litter box other times too that aren't predated by a little snacking. So I need to figure that out. And it's going to be really complicated because what if he goes to the bathroom at night all the time? I'm going to need to wire the door on the litter box to track every entry. And then I'm not going to know if it's him or the other cat. I'm not sure if this is going to be an easy experiment to control.
Well, that's quite interesting because I was thinking of something that I always watch and want to record.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed this over the years. If you make tea, make a cup of tea in the microwave. But I've noticed that the tea will boil quicker or the cup will get warmer depending on the makeup of the cup. If it's a glass cup or if it's a ceramic cup or if it's a bowl or a dish, they all have their own, you know, amount of heat they're going to either collect. And I want to get the water heated, not the cup. So I'm going to start keeping track.
Nice.
If I can measure it somehow, I'll do that. The amount of time it takes to boil the water, and because I don't think the cup is taking the heat away that it should be giving to the water. So
yeah, we want charts and graphs and a full PowerPoint from you by next week if we could have that.
Yeah. Should people think that they're, you know, I'm not smart enough to do this sort of project?
Oh, that's ridiculous. Of course not. So, I mean, I would say for anyone who's feeling a little inferior in this observation category, get a notebook out and just start writing things down that you see, right? Mm-hmm. And when something hooks your interest, when you kind of get that, like, that tingling sensation, that question inside of you, think, okay, well, if I go forward and make these observations with a question in mind, what would I want to record, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's that you notice a certain type of bird in your feeder every morning. Maybe it's that that one barista always gives you a little extra foam. But you could actually measure your foam in your coffee every morning and kind of make a little purpose-driven observation out of it.
And since it's a club, if you have a question you want to ask us, we have some time now. 844-724-8255 is our number, 844-724-8255. Perhaps you have a suggestion, something that you're working on and that your class project is working on. And this can be a class project, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of students of the sciences and otherwise are doing this in their classrooms right now. The other thing to think about, too, is that sharing your observations socially means that you're going to get some cool feedback and maybe some directions for future observations, right? We're doing this in a really social way so that mm-hmm. even scientists that do their own observations can provide some ideas for what you might want to look at.
Mm-hmm. So, Charles, how do they share this knowledge with us?
Well, as Ariel said, we're accepting submissions on a lot of different social media. The common hashtag is ObserveEverything. So you can look for that on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those good ones. There's full instructions on our website, sciencefriday.com/scienceclub, with links mm-hmm. to all the different platforms that we're supporting.
Mm-hmm. There's a difference, Ariel, between just seeing something and really observing it, right?
I think we're asking
you to really observe it. You might see it to begin with, catch your eye,
right?
But now we want you to observe it.
Now, a wiser person than me once said that observing is actually looking with a question or a hypothesis in mind, right? So it's
right.
it's not just saying, okay, well, there's all this stuff around. It's kind of a cloudy day, like whatever, right? It's saying, well, are the clouds moving in a single direction? Does it look like does it feel like the temperature changes every time I go into the shade? Does it mean that, you know, or that the butterflies are about to come out or that they're about to go away for the end of the year? You know, what is going on? And I actually, one of the things I'd like to mention here, too, is that there's a lot of organizations that help you learn how to observe. We call them citizen science organizations, right? But they provide all kinds of tools. They have apps. They have instructions. They've got live cams on bird nests that you can go and you can get started learning about the powers of observation kind of in an environment that's favorable to that.
You know, something I've always wondered about because I've been, you know, watching the weather. I'm a very big web. I'm a little weather stuff. And this might be an interesting observation is to keep track of how accurate the 5-day weather forecast is. Let's say it's on Monday and it says this is the week long. On Saturday, it's going to be raining or snowing or whatever it is. You write down on that Monday, this is what they say Saturday is going to be. And on Tuesday, this is what they say Sunday is going to be. And see how accurate that is. I mean, that's an idea.
Indeed.
You know, because I don't think it's very accurate.
I feel the same way.
That's my hypothesis. You know? Let's see if I can back that up with some data. Let's see if we can go to the phone. Let's go to Tucson. John in Tucson, hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi there, Ira Flato. This is John DeCoville. I was listening to your comments about the level of detail in the observation, and I was just calling to ask for a little more definition on writing things down.
So that's a great question. So, I mean, in terms of submitting your observations, what kind of things would you want to write and how would you want to write them? Now, I'm a big fan of the data table. Some scientists in the past have made their observations just in a narrative form. But, you know, in terms of submissions, there are a few things you can do. Take a picture of your notebook. Take a picture of your data, right? But if you want to go a step further, represent your data graphically. We've shown some incredible infographics on our site before. And I think, you know, looking at how you could maybe graph a change over time, maybe you make a bar graph comparing two different categories. Even 0-1 observations can be made quantitatively so that maybe your observations are a little more shareable and others can learn from them. That's a great question.
I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with our director, Charles Berquist, and our education manager, Ariel Zitch, about our science club. The challenge is to observe anything and everything.
Observe everything.
Let's see if we can go to the phones again. This time we'll go to Mike in Vienna, Virginia. Hi, Mike.
Hey there.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Love the program. Quick suggestion. I turned on the radio and only caught half of the cat experiment, something about a cat using a litter box, and then the question of whether or not it ate beforehand. Did I get that right?
You got it.
Do you have a cat?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a cat?
I don't, but I had a suggestion. The speaker was saying he wasn't sure how he was going to distinguish between two cats.
Yeah.
You know, at night. You could probably get a science kit with a magnet that would trip the mechanism that would let you know when the litter box is. So you could, one cat's collar could have the magnet, the other not, and then you would know whether or not it's using the litter box or feeding beforehand. That might solve the problem.
That's the integration of technology. Scientists integrate technology in their observations all the time.
Wow.
There are apps you can use to help you keep track of your observations. You can even use your GPS mapping system to figure out where you and your dog tend to walk when you're out on your walk every day. Is it random? Somebody making this type of observation recently figured out that dogs actually orient along an axis based on the sort of local magnetic field. Did you hear about this? It's part of the Ig Nobel Prizes, but you know, when they're doing their business. But what it really is about integrating technology in your observations. I think that's wonderful.
All right, Charles, what about the professionals? Can the professional scientists, can they get in on this?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of our listeners we know who know a lot more about observation than I ever will. And we want to get some of that knowledge out there as well. So if you're a pro at this, this is what you do. We'd love you to send in something about your tools, your techniques, how you do what you do. Show us, I don't know, the picture of the inside of your neutron detector or whatever that it is. Show us inside your world because that's valuable too.
We have a tweet from Andrew Brandt who says, for both the baby sleeping issue and the cat using litter box, I would suggest a networked motion sensor camera. I've used them for years.
Oh, my.
So you could, you know, maybe get night vision on your glitter box. They're out there, those cameras, and you could just do, you know, a time motion study.
Oh, for sure. And actually, that reminds me of another thing. So there are all these time-lapse apps out there now. Taking time-lapse observations can reveal patterns that you would never see with your naked eye. You set up your phone overnight to look at something that, you know, with a lamp, your fish tank, whatever, and it will take a picture every now and again, right?
Mm.
You can get some killer observations that way. And that's easy. That's hands-free, right? Then you just check it in the morning, and suddenly you've made a discovery.
Right. Or if the squirrels are eating up your food, how often do they get to the feeder or something like that? Stuff. And at nighttime, you're right. Some of these things will take pictures at nighttime in infrared. How long is our club going to be going for? Is this a month-long project?
Yep, we'll be back in about a month. I believe it's October 24th, something like that.
Yep.
And we'll talk about your submissions and chat some more about this and see what we learned.
Mm-hmm. And this is seems to be a good fit for a lot of citizen science
projects. Oh, yes. And I've been shopping around. I've got some faves. So Budburst, it's that time of year when fall phenology is in full swing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go out and watch a tree. Go out and Project Budburst even has data sheets to get you started. And, you know, if you don't even feel like leaving the comfort of your own home, you can watch penguins. There's a penguin watch on with Zooniverse right now. That's a web-based tool to actually conduct penguin observations the world over. We've also got the iNaturalist app that lets you, you know, record your observations in a community of people nearby so you can see what other our organisms people have been observing. And old standbys, things like Feeder Watch. Cornell Lab of Ornithology has killer webcams on some red-tailed hawks.
Mm-hmm.
There's whole clearinghouses online now, SciStarter.com. You can actually pick from nationwide citizen science projects the world over. I mean, it's pretty cool.
But they can always drop you a line at Science Friday.
Oh, please do. Yes, scienceclub@sciencefriday.com. You can reach us that way as well.
There you go. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. Both of you, Ariel Zitch, our education manager, and our director, Charles Berquist, two of the founding members of the Science Friday Science Club. And don't forget that hashtag is Observe Everything. We'll be able to track you that way.